I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You're listening to Farming News with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Irish Farmers Journal Farming News podcast. Barry Murphy with you here from the news team. I'm joined today here on the line by our livestock specialist, Declan Maron, Deputy News Editor Amy Ford, News Correspondent Declan O'Brien and Political Correspondent Pat O'Toole. Over the next 20 minutes or so, we'll discuss our exclusive survey on the feed costs facing farmers this winter and ask what it means for beef farmers. We'll also discuss an extension to the acres deadline, organic scheme applications, leased and forestry land prices, turkeys for Christmas and the impact of a weak tornado on farms in County Wexford. First up, Declan Maron, we'll head over to yourself. You report on page one this week that farmers are facing record feed costs this winter. We've conducted a survey across the country which shows that feed costs are up about 120 to 130 euro per tonne on where they were this time last year. Just look, Dec, it's the talk lads in the marts and in the co-ops how expensive meat has gone in particular. What can you tell us?
Yeah, Barry, unfortunately, it's not a good news story on the front of the paper, but, you know, it is one that's affecting nearly every farmer in the country and across all sectors too. So meal costs up 42% year on year. As you said, 120 to 130 euro per tonne increase on average across the board. It's a huge financial burden on all farmers as we head in. Look, we've had high prices all year, but maybe coming into the winter period is now the time when we're ramping up meal usage. And it's the time when farmers are really going to start feeling the squeeze, financial squeeze. So, you know, if we just looked at a 35 suckler cow farmer keeping his weanlings over the first winter, the added meal cost this winter is going to add 2,000 euro to the feed bill between now and next spring for, say, winter finishers, which there are probably less of this year due to the price of meal costs. But for every 100 animals that are going to be finished out of the shed next spring, there's an extra 8,450 euro going to be spent on meal to get them to slaughter. So huge financial implications. You know, the comments within the survey would have highlighted, you know, farmers, I suppose, maybe not worry, but concerns over increased input costs right across the board. You know, a lot of people said, yes, feed costs are one huge part of it, but they're also, it's combined with higher energy costs and fertilizer costs and everything that's been going up. So big challenges there. I suppose other things within the survey that came out was we looked at the different regions in the country and, you know, compared with as close as we could, like with like, for different rations. So in the paper this week, we were able to compare, say, the price you're paying compared to other parts of the country. And what's interesting is you would think down in the southeast where most of the grain is grown would be the cheapest area for ration, but in fact in a lot of cases it isn't, and even the northwest comes out as one of the cheapest places to buy some rations, which maybe is unexpected. Within that, then we're also looking at the cost of bulk buying in bulk versus buying in small 25 kilo bag versus buying, say, a half ton bag. And we would always have said that buying in the bag is more expensive. We would have always said about 40 euro a ton above, say, a bulk price for buying in the bag. What we're actually seeing now, that that's gone up to 60 euro a ton of a differential in price. So that's like nearly 14% increase over the bulk costs if you're buying in small bags. So again, you know, in a time when we're all looking at costs, if you can at all buy in bulk or even go to the half ton bag or, you know, those black bins that you can bring and get them filled in your local merchant, there's a big cost saving in doing that. I suppose this, why has it gone from 40 up to 60 euro a ton? It's probably down to, again, the mills having higher energy costs, plastic costs going up, timber costs have gone up for pallets and stuff like that. So they had to increase maybe the price between the two products. And then as well as that, then we got some respondents say from organic producers. Again, most were buying in a 25 kilo bag. And we've seen, we're seeing ration prices there from 700 euro a ton for beef rations up to 1200 euro a ton for some sheep rations. And then some dairy rations coming in at about 950 euro per ton. So a lot of talk about organics there at the moment, but obviously it'll have to be based around a low concentrate input system when you see the prices of rations in that sector.
Look, there's a lot in it. You've gone through it there. I suppose looking at full analysis on page 11 with a map where readers can see what feed is costing in their parts of the country. You mentioned, I suppose, bringing cattle to slaughter there. And I know, I think it was yourself, that you reported earlier in the year or a few weeks ago about beef finishers needing a 6 euro per kg price for beef next spring if it's to be worth their while at all. Has this survey compounded that figure or the farmers need more?
Absolutely, yeah. That was Chagas figures that were published at a winter finishers forum down in Kilkenny Mart earlier in autumn. And, you know, they were putting up prices from 582, I think, up to 622 needed just to break even. If you're to put 100 euro per head margin on that, you need an extra 30 cent per kilo in beef price. So, like, none of us are in this business just to break even. So there's a huge financial burden. I think that the meal price used in those examples would be close to what we're paying right now. You know, last winter we went through a winter where nearly every month there was a letter coming out from the feed company saying the prices were increasing by another 10, 15 euro a ton each month. The hopes is this year that it's a little more stable going into the winter. Look, nothing is stable at the moment, but the hopes are that, you know, we won't be seeing those same price increases over the coming months, that what we're at now, we hopefully will hold through to springtime.
Thanks, Declan. Look, it's all very interesting. And staying with page one, Amy, you report that the deadline for acres has been extended until the 5th of December. Look, it'll be a welcome move, I'd imagine, for many advisors and the farmers they're working for. I suppose for farmers now interested in the scheme, what do they need to do?
Yeah, Barry, look, I suppose a 2 week extension, advisors would have been calling for an extension before the scheme even opened, such as the volume of work that they were having to compile between plans and submitting applications, and then when the application system actually opened. So look, there's a 2 week extension. Monday, 5th of December is now the deadline, and that's in an effort to ease the pressure on those advisors. Anyone that hasn't got their application in, get in touch with your advisor, see what needs to be done, essentially, is the advice. And if you're going in this tranche of it, to go now, I suppose the CAP meeting in Tuam this week that we held, department officials said that the next tranche will probably open next year. But whenever that opens, it's unclear, like, whether it's the end of the year, like this time of year, or not. And you'd have to say it could possibly be the end of towards the end of next year, in the second half of the year, because of BPS applications and so on in the first half of the year and everything else. So if you want to get into acres, get onto your advisor essentially in this first tranche and apply by the 5th of December.
Yeah, lads need to get going on for sure. And look, staying with the schemes, Amy, we have an update this week on the number of farmers who've applied to the organic farming scheme. Where is it at now?
Yeah, you have the update there, Barry, this week on page 3. I suppose this time round, look, the when the application process opened for this time around the organic farming scheme, it was on the back of really enticing rates, new organic rates for the scheme, which are a lot more than they were previously. So they've completely jumped up. But over 500 farmers have applied so far to the organic scheme. Minister of State Pippa Hack has confirmed to the Journal. And there's, you know, nearly 140 still in draft form, with new farmers starting applications daily. So the deadline for that is the 9th of December. So, you know, that's really positive numbers so far, you could say, into the scheme so far.
Look, another interesting one in the paper this week, Amy, our colleague Rachel Donovan reports on page 7 that there should be no turkey shortages this Christmas, despite the concerns, I suppose, that have been out there on bird flu with the housing order. She spoke to a few growers. What were they saying?
Yeah, very. To put a bit of context on it, I suppose, look, last week, obviously, we heard about the housing order that the minister was announcing, and that came into effect just Monday, just gone. But everywhere else was, I suppose, awash with news of bird flu and, you know, what's happening here and what's happening in the UK. And I suppose there's no turkey shortage going to be in Ireland this Christmas. Essentially, growers have said that's as long as they survive the next fortnight. And I suppose with the weather over the last few weeks as well, and the number of cases are low. You could say, like, the whole thing kicked off really when there was a case in a mute swan above in Cavan identified. And obviously Cavan, Monaghan, that whole area is heavy poultry industry. Essentially, that's where the majority of them are based. But back to your question, basically, there's going to be no turkey shortage this Christmas. You know, we've speaking to Hogan's Turkeys and me, they've said that the housing order should mean producers will get ahead of the virus if it doesn't become as big an issue as it is in the UK. And I suppose to compare Ireland and the UK has had blast of mandatory culls. They're down a lot of birds over there, and it's a completely different situation. There's no bird flu in any poultry flocks here in Ireland to date, and touch wood that there isn't. So at this minute in time, the housing order is there to ensure that those birds are housed and they don't come into contact with wild birds carrying bird flu.
Good stuff. It seems to be a case of prevention rather than cure with the bird flu. So, and look, Amy, just finally then staying with yourself, Rachel also reports on page 6 that dairy farmer demand is driving leased land prices above the €400 per acre mark. Look, that's a big increase there. What can you tell us?
Yeah, and I suppose leased land and land in general, I think we all agree it's going to be a change in market in the coming weeks, months and years between the new forestry programme, nitrates and carbon farming all coming down the track. You know, there's a lot of competition for land there, essentially. So the cost of leased land in around Cork has topped €400 an acre this year, and that's on the back of buoyant dairy farmer demand. One auctioneer telling us that the land market's crazy at the moment and there isn't much land coming available. Like two pieces of good dual purpose land that would be suitable for both dairy and tillage made over €400 an acre, and that was also naked land, so land without entitlements. In around Kilkenny, that type of land is making between €400 and €450 an acre, and there's an auctioneer there saying that it could rise even further. So really competitive land market at the moment, and obviously the depending on where you go, the land prices are swapping and changing, shall we say. It towards the west, it might be towards 300 or 330 an acre, all very local, but I'd say this will be one to watch in the coming weeks and months.
Thanks, Amy. And look, sticking with land prices, a connected story there. Declan O'Brien, you report on page 6. I know Amy mentioned the forestry premiums, but the forestry land is forecast to hit 7,000 an acre due to the increase in those grants and premiums. That's big money, I suppose. Like, who's driving it?
Well, there is huge pent-up demand for forestry ground. A lot of it has been driven by institutional investors. And we're coming back to what Amy mentioned there, carbon farming. And as well as that, it makes sense to, as an investment vehicle, now, particularly now with the increased premiums and the longer lifespan of those premiums. You know, they've increased by, on conifers, by 50% from 510 a hectare up to 746 a hectare. And the lifespan of the premiums has gone from 15 to 20 years. So there's a lot of talk in the sector that institutional investors are going to come in and see this as a way of securing good long-term returns for investments. And these are hedge funds that are talking of coming in here, but also farmers. Now, the real problem is going to be where are they going to get the land between re-wetting, nitrates, and now forestry. There is going to be huge demand. So obviously, this is pushing up the price because the premiums have put a new floor on the price. So what auctioneers are saying is that your basic planting land that you could have got for 5,000 an acre, 6,000 an acre, you're now going to be paying north of 7,000 an acre. And there's going to be a lot of activity in the market for this ground. And if the talk in the industry is to be believed, you're going to see an awful lot of institutional investors coming in as well, looking to buy tranches of land to plant. So it is going to be, it's going to be a change market. And in, it could very well be that these policy changes, both in CAP, both driven by climate change, and now by driven by these new premium levels, do you know that it's going to be a totally changed land market from here on.
Yeah, it very much looks like it, and it'll be interesting to see where that goes. Look, there's more on those leased land stories and the cost of forestry land on page 6 of this week's paper. And just sticking with forestry, Deck, you have another interesting one there on page 13, that there's a 12 million plan for 4,000 acres of woodland in the West. I suppose, who's leading this one?
Yeah, it's a not-for-profit organisation called Home Tree that are based in Innistimon, West Clare. And they have a 12 million euro fund put together. Now, they're looking to plant 4,000 acres of primeval, what they call temperate rainforest. And essentially, it's primeval forest that they say can grow in the uplands in the west of Ireland. They have one site bought in a place called Knock on Bone between Linnan and Mam in Connemara and Galway. Now, they're looking for further sites from Donegal right down the west coast to West Cork. So they're looking for institutional investors. They're looking for to crowdfund for this. They're saying that they'll also work with farmers if they plant an area that farmers contiguous to that, to their plantations, if they want to join in. They say they will help fund that, and they have a 2.4 million fund for that purpose. And really what we're looking at here is people who are looking at this not only from a climate change perspective, but also from the perspective of the biodiversity loss and reinstating what, well, as they say, the primeval forests. They're mainly planting oak, willow and birch. So it'll be an interesting development. And they're yet another player in the land market. So how everybody will fit into this land market into the future is just not easy to see. But it's going to make for high land prices and very interesting battles between all the players.
Barry, I might interject there actually, because you have another angle to that this week in terms of the land market, and this is obviously fast turning into the land podcast this week. But the National Parks and Wildlife Service, Barry, has acquired over 4,000 hectares of Caoilte land in Mayo. Like, it's a strange turn of events, you could say, in one way. Give us a bit of a flavour of it, but the full story's on page 3 this week, obviously.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, look, as Deck mentioned there, players in the land market, and I suppose the two big players here were Caoilte and the National Parks and Wildlife Service. And what's happened is the NPWS has acquired 4,500 hectares of Caoilte land in Mayo. For any of the listeners from that part of the world, I suppose they'd maybe know it more as Ballycroy National Park. And it was back in the spring, the name was changed to Wild Neffin National Park. It's now at 17,000 hectares with that 4,500 added to it, making it the third largest national park in the country. So it's actually bigger than Killarney National Park. It's prime land for nature restoration, the NPWS says. It's a spawning salmon and sea trout stream catchment area. So I suppose it has what they're saying is strong ecological importance. The road to the acquisition started back in 2002 with the NPWS, I suppose, initially exploring how it could be adjoins to their existing national park there in Mayo. And it progressed from there to, I suppose, in 2009, the NPWS says Caoilte began to roll back some of its commercial management. The land, it's one of the wettest parts of the country, with very, very high rainfall. And that led to, in some parts of that 4,500 hectares that Caoilte kind of have handed over, trees just simply weren't growing. They were there for a good many years and they were only a couple of foot high. So I suppose once Caoilte kind of realised that, and in a conversation around, maybe this land would be better used for rewilding or for bringing back to wilderness, it moved into a joint management agreement initially, where then Taoiseach Enda Kenny launched this back in 2014 so that Bo Cuilta and the MPWS were to lease it together. And since then, it has transitioned into the MPWS's sole management. So it's kind of a slow process, but I suppose it's a big bank of land. It will mark, I think, one of the largest land transfers in the state's recent history. And it surrounds a number of areas in Mayo, kind of along the N25. There is the road that it kind of borders. And it's the Neffenbeg Mountains is what it covers too. So look, it'll be interesting to see where it goes. And will this be a precedent that'll be, I suppose, repeated elsewhere in the country? Dennis Strong, he's the services, the MPWS's Western Division Regional Manager. We had a good chat with him, I suppose, in recent days. And Dennis is saying that, you know, this won't be repeated elsewhere. It's unprecedented in scale, that the block is the largest single block of coniferous forest in the country that has been handed over to the MPWS. He's also talking about re-wetting. So about 25% of the former Cuilta land is to be re-wet. Anything with peat of more than 1 metre, and as long as the water water table is stable. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, with I suppose, the European Commission's Nature Restoration Law coming our way, you know, how will the players such as Bord na Mona, Cuilta, and the National Parks and Wildlife Service, I suppose, fit into that plan, and how land may or may not change between the parties. So it'll be interesting to see where that one goes. And look, we'll move on. So from that story to Pat O'Toole. Pat, you're after joining us there, I suppose, to talk about your story this week on the farmers in Wexford who were hit by what Met Éireann has described as a weak tornado. Like I was talking to, I think it was Paul Downs of Met Éireann, and he was saying that this is a very dangerous incident. You know, we have about 20 weak tornadoes that are about as strong as the weakest ones in America, and that they happen maybe 15 to 20 times a year in Ireland, that they're only on the ground for a couple of minutes, but they cause havoc while they're down, and they're very dangerous. You've been speaking to some of the farmers on page 4.
Yeah, like you say, this all happened very quickly, less than a minute. The estimates I got were 20 to 30 seconds. Thankfully, nobody was seriously injured, but a trail of absolute destruction in the very narrow corridor that this mild tornado ran through. And that was about 100 metres wide. So if you look at the front page of this week's paper, you can see John Stafford's silage pit. His neighbours are helping him to cover it. And it's great the metal has kicked in. Neighbours have come in to help the most affected farmers. But that silage pit was stripped. The cover disappeared and hasn't been found, and the tires were left on the pit, rather like a magician taking a tablecloth out from under a set table. It gives an indication of the ferocity of this wind. The pit beside it, the cover is destroyed. His sheds are ruined, roofs down, structural damage to pillars, sheets of galvanizing wrapped around pillars. And it's really hard to get your head around the speed and the ferocity with which this thing hit. In terms of Brendan Keogh's farm, Brendan is renting a farm called Gibbons's, and he had a big shed there, 150 by 85 feet gone, just hardly a sheet left on it. Thankfully, the doors blew open and his cows got out and were mostly unharmed. Although, of course, animals in the wake of being exposed to this tornado have been traumatized, and they're not milking very well, the cows, but they'll come back. The hope would be that pregnancies aren't affected. That would be the big hope. But I think in terms of another indication of just how ferocious this was, there were 150 trees taken out in Gibbons. It's an old farm, a fine place, you'd say, I suppose. And in every direction, three trees blown 30 metres into Brendan's field, and trees beside it blown 30 metres in the opposite direction into the neighbouring field. Pigeons and crows dead in the fields that got caught in this storm, and it was moving so fast, obviously even birds couldn't fly out of its path. So it's an extraordinarily destructive. Farmers are waiting for assessors to come and householders. There's one young man in the area which is Clongeen to Folks Mills in South Wexford, and he had spent 8 years building his dream home, and it was just about finished, and it's been completely destroyed by the storm, and because it was in the build phase, it was uninsured, so this man is hopelessly exposed. There's a GoFundMe for him, And what the local IFA, Gerald Mahoney, who's the Wexford IFA chairman, has organised a meeting where state agencies who provide schemes and assistance for people who've been so affected and local representatives will be there. That's next Tuesday in Clongeen, and we'll be there because I think it's an important one. I heard Francie Gorman of IFA recently say that when things affect only a very few farmers, that the IFA needs to be there because that's the IFA's job, is to represent a few, that if something is affecting the majority of people, they'll be well able to represent themselves. And I think that's very apt. And, this is a classic case of that. Only a few people affected, but, life-changing damage done to their farms and yards.
Yeah, you said it there yourself, Pat, life-changing. Look, I don't want to use it, but the word apocalyptic really comes to mind. I don't know how those people and farmers got through that, and hopefully they get the support they need. A reminder that our Irish Farmers Journal CAP information series continues with the next event scheduled for Tuesday the 15th November in the Errigal Country House Hotel, Coot Hill, County Cavan at 7:30 p.m. It'll be the last of the four-part series to help educate farmers on the schemes and payments in the next CAP. Farmers can register for the last event in Cavan at www.ifj/register. Remember, you can find out more about all the stories discussed by the team today in this week's paper, available in shops across the country now. Thanks for joining and for listening. Safe farming, and talk to you the next time.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.